video showing a number of water-polluting mining equipment operating on the Ofin sent us on a fact-finding mission. We found the location at Abumpe, a small village in the Achumampunwa district of Ashanti. Despite a security operation here, a bird's eye view revealed a number of Sanfan operators working with impunity directly in the river at various portions of the highly polluted resource.
So this is the Ofin River. And it will shock you to know that this used to be very, very clean. But now, as in this bottle, you can see the color of the river.
Residents like Abeliku Kwame, a farmer at Abesia, are directly affected by the pollution of the river. He tells me they've arrested the illegal miners many times but did not receive the support of local leaders. We asked for reinforcement from local leaders, the assembly member and the unit committee members, before the operation, but they didn't mind us. After we drove them out of Abumpi, Intabanu, and other villages, we reported to the DCE of Makranso and police commander, but they did not assist us. Now they are back, working actively at Abesia number 1 and 2 and Abumpe number 1 and 2. At Kojokrum, some of the miners polluting the river escaped into the Ofin at the site of our team. Local leaders like Beposo Ochami Ajinim Boatin denies knowledge of the problem. When I first noticed the illegality, I notified the MP and they came to burn some equipment. But now I never knew they are back on the river polluting it. But DCE for Achumampunwa, Isaac Kofi Maafo, who was scouting the area, says he's on top of his job.
We arrested about 9 people there. Ran out there in Ninehini police custody. So next week, Wednesday, they will do another dissect meeting and make another plans to come back again. Mm. We are still working on it until they will put a point to it. The challenge itself is it's manageable. We can use our own internal security officers to combat the issue. It's not that big of a level. They will manage it.
Reporting for Joy News, Erastus Asaredonko, River Ofin, Achumampunwa, Ashanti Region.
These are angry and disappointed constituency executive of the National Patriotic Party in the Elembele district of the Western Region, who have been here at the Western Region Police Command for more than 10 hours, waiting in anticipation of a possible release of the DCE and 4 others. Tempest rising. Almost all offices here at the Regional Police Command has been closed. It's past 7:30 p.m. and they are not sure of the fate of Kwesi, Bonzo and the 4.
I'm telling you, local side. The President Akufo-Addo thinks his regional executive chairman and regional ministers are fighting and saying he's lying. I'm going to knock out. This is, you say, excavator, where's your way? Excavator, you who? Oko Chapacha, for evidence sake, have invited me about policy. We're here around 8, 9 o'clock a.m. As I'm speaking, none of the regional executive, not regional minister, but on my house, also on what sort of life is this? Is this party worth dying for? Obiano fighting and I'm saying he's in trouble. And nobody is
For more than 12 hours, the district chief, executive Fuelembele, Kwesi Bonzo, and three others were in the custody of the Western Regional Police Command. His arrest, according to sources, happened meters away from the Axim Junction after he had attempted to verify whether an excavator being transported was among the two that went missing after the Elembele District Mining Committee seized them at an illegal mining site on August 30th, 2022. Here is Constituency Communications Director Stephen Yao.
As a party, as an NPP party, that we are fighting Galamsey. And if you are fighting Galamsey and a DC, who's also a citizen of Ghana, I'm over a chairman of the DISEC. I've cut a Galamsey, an excavator. Bring it to the police station. How can he be arrested? How can the DC be arrested? Say we are fighting Galamsey. I don't think we are fighting Galamsey. I can see it's a quack that don't that we are doing. I don't think, for me, I'm not sure MPP, we are ready to fight Galamsey.
Kwesi Bonzo was granted bail while the four remained in police custody. Two police vehicles were brought to pick up the four suspects from the regional police command. In his Lacoste and shorts, he stood in front of one of the officers, very quiet, with his hands in his pocket. He has been charged with five counts, according to his counsel, Salome Erika Abeka.
Yes, so finally, all the five accused persons have been charged, and their charge statements have been taken. They will be arraigned before court tomorrow. That's the information I have been given. And they have different charges, but for Honorable Bonzo, he has about five charges, including conspiracy to assault itself, and then resisting arrest, and other two charges.
He's expected to appear before the Takoradi Circuit Court on Thursday.
It's unfortunate for anybody to say that we are implicated. For heaven's sake, we were the first to break the news of the missing excavators. I, when the press came to me, I informed you that the last time the excavators were seen in Elembele was around 2 p.m. on Wednesday, 31st August, when we invited the police to take over and watch the excavators. Subsequently, there has been several discrepancies in the account. And after that, the police issued a statement that myself, Mr. Penny, who is a member of the District Small Scale Mining Committee, who is the one who went to the illegal mining site and impounded the excavators, we are under investigation, plus one other person who happened to be the NIB officer. So since the police issued a statement last Saturday, it is supposed that the excavators are in our custody, because remember the police denied taking custody of the excavator in their statement. So it's supposed that the excavators were in our custody. It is for that reason that when we got hint that some excavator was being transported out of the district, like any rational human being, we got interested. Because in the first place, the police, through a statement, has said that the excavators is in our custody, that we never handed over any excavator to police custody. And this was a written statement issued by the police. I think it's unfortunate. Maybe every misfortune comes with its own blessing. Meanwhile, there's one more excavator to be found. We have confidence that the same process through which they found the one excavator, they will use the same process to find the second excavator. And then also, the owners of the excavators must be found and brought to book.
There's different charges for the four of them, but then one paramount charge that runs through most of them is the offensive conduct, like they have exhibited conduct and then conspiracy to commit crime to wage offensive conduct.
We heard charges have been dropped. Do you have this piece of information?
None that I'm aware. I have not been told anything. I have not been told that these charges against the Honorable D.
Right, so you have been watching some footages and news reports very recent developments in the Galamsey situation, very, very recent developments. Now, let me introduce my guests for this morning, joining us on the first subject matter of fighting Galamsey. Samuel Abujinapoy is MP Damongo and Minister, Lands and Natural Resources. He joins us by phone. Professor Kwesi Enim, Director, Faculty of Academic Affairs and Research, Kofi Annan International Peacekeeping Training Center. Joins us via Zoom. Professor Gladys Nyakwansa is Co-Principal Investigator, University of York, also with the UG Galamsey Research Team. She joins us via Zoom. And Dr. John Osai Kwapong is Political Scientist, Democracy and Development Fellow, CDD Ghana, joins us via Zoom. In the studio is Martin Pebu. He is lawyer and rights activist. Thank you, lady and gentlemen, for making time to join us this morning to see what we can do to assist the state to better focus on fighting Galamsey, which promises to destroy us if we don't fight it. So, let me begin. If the minister is joined us, we can... Okay, we don't have the minister yet. Let's take a bit of a trip back, memory lane, when we, the Galamsey fight, so to speak, under President Akufo-Addo began, and we all started applauding the move. He had promised that he was putting his presidency on the line over this issue. Discussions were had on Newsfile. We had several discussions, among other things. Kokubako has some information about Aisha Wang and told us how powerful she was using sex as her weapon. We have been told about how there have been stories about how Aisha Wang got a police commander, transferred because of how powerful she was. Sat in a police commander's office and smoke, you know, while she was being interrogated over matters. Let's just do a bit of memory lane and return to hear our various speakers. Our focus is whether or not they think that the fight has been real, and what can be done and ought to be done. Not can be done, really, ought to be done. Because if we don't do anything, we have heard the Ghana Water Company tell us over and again that if we are not careful, we will have to import water. We'll have to import water. At this stage, are you even able to afford it? If it's imported, can you imagine what happens? All right, so take a listen to some of this.
Across the political divide, she's got her agents placed in state institutions, particularly the security agencies, and she's able to wriggle herself out of danger or trouble any time she's touched. I hope it doesn't happen this time around. That's why those who are receiving the calls from the so-called power brokers must be sure who are calling them, and they must expose them if indeed they work for the system.
Right.
It's part of the kill, and she's got accomplices. The other one is called Monica. The other one, the name has slipped me because it's a Chinese name. I can't even pronounce. But they are powerful. Look, and they see, part of their strength is that they built up a certain system of blackmailing. They are women. So I'm not going to use certain words, and I'm not going to say certain things. As to when they came into town, what they began to do, what were they, had nothing to do with Galamsey. Gradually, they moved from that particular trade into Galamsey. Look, they have... They have video and audio recordings of people who are powerful, of people who have been entrusted with responsibilities to protect us as the people. I'm telling you, that's how dangerous the game is. And that is where the strength, the power of these Chinese women are coming from.
They have entrapped them in videos containing what?
Sex. They have video and audio recordings of their conversations with some strategically placed persons from then and now. And some they are having sex with, or they have girls, some mainly Chinese, who they brought into town, who sleep with these big men or big guys, well placed. And they have them. And they use it to blackmail our big men into submission. That's how powerful they have become.
That, why would you want tomorrow to arrest any Ghanaian associated with illegal mining? What will you do when you cannot do this to a Chinese national who has with impunity disrespected our law, helped in polluting our environment, probably even in some of their activities, lives may have been lost in those particular areas. And we cannot hold Aisha Wang accountable. Ghana, under Nana Akufo-Addo, cannot hold Aisha Wong, an illegal known galamsey kingpin, accountable. Then who else can you hold accountable in this country? It makes a mockery of their presence when he said that he was determined to fight galamsey. As parliament resumes, I'll file a question in the name of the minority leader for the Minister of Interior to provide a list of foreign nationals arrested and being prosecuted. So
these are state agents who are almost untouchable. Because if we go back to the 2017-2018 escape of Aisha Wang, and the argument that she has been released because we were looking for the Sinohydro loan, and that where she should be to be prosecuted, it could affect the loan, then Aisha is not an ordinary Chinese gangster. She's an agent of the state. She's a spy. And her expertise is in economic warfare, deliberately destroying our environment and our water bodies through galamsey, so that the cyanide and the mercury will go through our underground water, come through the food chain, and destroy the cocoa crop. And we know that Japan in particular, that loved our cocoa beans, is now disturbed because they found traces of chemicals in our cocoa beans.
We have a law. It was amended in 2019, which is the mining law. And it says that when foreigners that are arrested for illegal mining or for breaking the mining laws of the country, there's a minimum sentence of 25 years, which they must serve in Ghanaian jails before they are let out. This was 2019, and there was a whole lot of hullabaloo about it. So how did this woman end up being sent out or allowing to go? And we take it that maybe she left before this law came into effect. Then how on earth, In just last month, in July, when I read this report from the Fourth Estate, that only two out of the people who had been arrested for destroying our country, the Chinese nationals especially, only two were in our jails. And you can imagine, this mustn't happen.
We are talking about such a high-profile person who was allegedly deported by the same government, when they should have been prosecuting her, they filed a nolle prosequi and claimed to have deported her. Now we are even questioning, where is the evidence that she was really deported back to China? We are demanding evidence. And you see, I know that in deportation, there are some bilateral agreements, terms of deportation, where you cannot re-enter the country you are being deported from. Those of you who are covered with the Susudis affair, for example, when Michael Susudis was deported from the United States of America, one of the terms of the agreement was that he cannot re-enter the United States of America. It is his entire life and he has not been able to, and he will not even try to do that. So how is it that if Aisha Huang was really deported, she is able to find her way back here, obtains a Ghana card? I mean, can you believe it? It's like a scene in a Hollywood movie. If this was a movie, we would say that the scriptwriters have exaggerated and that they really, you know, expanded the frontiers.
Yeah,
of
big time. Are you doubting? I mean, as a minority in parliament, you doubt that indeed the extradition process or perhaps a deportation was genuine. Is that the position?
At this point, we are very doubtful of every matter. Look, Aisha Huang is clear that she had very deep roots and she has allies.
Right. So those were some sounds from the past and some to just in the course of the week. You hear the minority leader, Samuel Okudzeto Ablakwa, and, you know, so let me go to the phone, to the discussion right away. And I'd like to begin with Professor Gladys Nyakwansa, who is co-principal investigator, University of York, UG Galamsey Research Team. Thank you for making time to join us this morning. First of all, we want our focus to be what we think are the problems that we need to overcome so that we must at all costs have a fight that is real, actual, and to win it. Because if we don't do that, posterity will judge us really badly and harshly. So from the fallouts, briefly, from the fallouts of what we are seeing now, the arrest of Aisha Huang, what would you say are the cracks? How bad is the situation now? Looking also at what happened with this DCE and his encounter with the police. Prof, please unmute your microphone. Yes, I think it's done. Hello, Prof.
Hello.
Yes, we can hear you very clearly.
All right. Can you please repeat the set of questions?
Right. So looking at the arrest, the return of Aisha Huang, and what has happened as regards DC Bonzo, what do you find to be the lapses, the weaknesses in the so-called fight that we need to check to be on the path to winning this fight?
Thank you very much. A year ago, on this same platform, I said one major thing, that what we are calling a fight, if we want to win, we must involve local people. Now, let me play the devil's advocate. We are calling it illegal mining, fight against illegal mining. What makes it illegal? Is it the people who mine, the processes involved in the mining, or the act of mining itself? So my grandmother gave me a piece of land, and I've been farming that land. I know that there is diamond, there is gold in that land. But my grandmother told me, farm on the land.
We seem to be losing. Okay, we'll try and re-establish contact with Professor Gladys Nyakwansa, who is co-principal investigator. Great. I think, please, let's try again. We lost you.
Okay. So somebody comes from Accra with a permit.
Right.
That he has been given a paper to take the gold out of my land. and he destroys my farm, takes the gold. And I am sitting there in the village, no food, no water, no money. So if my neighbor sees that there is gold in her farm, and she also thinks that she will not wait for somebody to come from Accra to take the gold, he will take it by himself. Then what happens? I don't know if you see the dimensions of the fight, the complexities involved.
Mm.
If we say that it is illegal for anybody to mine without proper procedure, whatever, whatever, but the local people, the owners of the land, sit in abject poverty and see big people from all over come to take that which they think belong to them, then you are not even starting the fight. There's no way you will win. And as I said, if the local people decide that there will be no mining, we will not mine our land, and we will not allow other people to mine the land, there will be no need for a fight.
Mm.
There will be no need for a fight.
We have heard chiefs who are supposed to be our landlords, so to speak, say very recently, a week or two ago, from the Ashanti region, that we should stop trying to bring even chiefs in the picture because they don't have power over the Galamsey situation or the mining situation in their areas. We should blame only at the national level.
I'm not here to apportion blame. I don't know whom to blame. But I want us to really look at this whole fight. Who are the members? I asked that question last year. Who are the actors involved in the fight? Who is fighting who? Okay. So the chiefs may not be responsible. They may not have any hand. But the people themselves, the individual landowners. So from the projects we run, when you speak to people on the ground, people's cocoa farms are left hanging because galamseyers have dug around all the farm and they can't even have access to the farm. And they tell you, when the galamseyers come and tell you, sell your land to us to mine, and you refuse. When you sleep and wake up, they have dug around your farm. And then you have no option than to sell the farm to them very cheaply. Okay, the excavators, these are not items that you can smuggle on the quiet into the forest. People will see, and the people in the town, there are hunters in the villages, there are farmers, right? There are Pamwan tappers. They see. When they see, what do they do? If we really want to win the fight, so-called fight, engage the people and let the engagement be genuine. Don't let us do something to represent something, because the people are not fools. Forgive my words, for lack of a better word.
Mm.
So when they see that you are only using them as a means to an end, then they refuse to play along, and they also do what you are doing, and they can do it better. When the police goes to do an operation, morning, maximum 5 hours. We have 24 hours in a day. So maximum 10 hours. The rest of the 14 hours, where will you be? So when you are sleeping, they are digging, and so on and so forth. So we need to have a more serious conversation about this. Forget about sending police to fight. What we say we want to do, let us mean it. If we mean what we say we want to do, the people who live in the Galamsey areas, they are not happy with the situation. Well, I have visited a number of the places where Galamsey occurs. It is very sad. it is very sad. Farmers have to buy pure water to go and mix chemicals, weedicides and things to spray their farms.
Really?
They have to buy. Yes.
Where is this?
Etiwa West.
Oh, Lord.
That's where we worked. They have to buy pure water, not just to drink, but so they can mix agrochemicals, you know, to spray their farms, pesticides and so on and so forth. They have to buy pure water. So farming then becomes unattractive. And in a country where you have a large number of young people who are unemployed and they can't even see farming as an alternative, well, they just jump onto the Galamsey bandwagon and it becomes difficult to control anybody and anything. So let us mean the things we say. If we don't mean to do them, let's keep quiet about it and let's stop spending so much money. But if we really mean to do it, then let us do it the way we know we ought to do it. This morning when you started your program, you played one of the patriotic songs I knew when I was a young person.
Right.
I want to challenge you and multimedia. There's another song. There are more patriotic songs. Maybe for the next 30 days, if you would begin your broadcasts and end with Arise Ghana Youth for Your Country, maybe it will, we will develop a little sense of patriotism from listening to the words. Mm. You know why primary school, day nursery children, they allow them to speak a lot of rhymes, say rhymes. There is a connection between what you hear, what you say, and how you behave. So it's a challenge, my personal challenge to multimedia. Maybe you should play it. Every program, play a bit of it. Arise, Ghana youth, for your country. It's sad. I look at the Galamsey things, it is very sad. Very, very sad. And we appear to be trapped. We are trapped. People are buried in their, they are digging and even digging cemeteries. Yes, no human dignity left. They are digging cemeteries. And it is not just the people who are there. There are a lot of migrants, okay? And if I come from my hometown to, say, your hometown to dig, and all I'm looking for is money, whether your land is destroyed or your water bodies are destroyed is none of my business, because I can always go back to my town, hometown, and drink from the clean water, you know. So it's a very complex situation. And I don't know if I have another chance to talk about the project we were doing at Asunafo. Last year, I mentioned that there was one town standing in the district infested with Galamsey. They had said no vehemently to mining of any sort, legal or illegal. But as we speak, things are not the same. So if I have another opportunity to come back, I probably will talk about that project. But otherwise, I'll leave it here for now.
Right. Prof, I'll return to you shortly so that you take us through that, because we want to understand what it is that is going on so that we can begin to think about the solutions and also get the duty bearers, more particularly, to appreciate what it is that we are allowing onto, you know, ourselves and generations. Professor Kwesi Enin, thank you very much for joining us once again this morning. So my question to her will be the same to you. Looking at Aisha Wan being arrested now, and thankfully the Attorney General makes a very reassuring, you know, promise that she will not only be prosecuted for her present sins, but her previous sins as well. Then you look at what the DCE Bonzo and the police, the clash they went into because they needed to take, you know, hold of this excavator. What do you find to be missing and as a weakness. That's not making the so-called fights, as it were, valid. Hello, Prof. Zenin. Please unmute your mic.
I'm getting a little too old for all this modern technology.
That's all right. It happens to all of us. Yes.
Yeah. Something. There is no fight. What we call a fight are simple rhetorical flourishes to give a false sense that we are doing something that prevents us from asking the very difficult questions. Let me start with the Attorney General's assurance that she will not only be prosecuted for her present sins, but also for her past crimes. But I want to caution the Attorney General or make a suggestion. Punishing Aisha Wang alone does not begin to tinker with the problem or the extent of the problem. We need to ask ourselves, who are those who have colluded with her, connived with her, facilitated her business to the extent that we are even in doubt if she ever left this country? And if the Attorney General wants to go or to examine her past crimes, then that opens up some really very interesting opportunities for us to begin to drill down. Number one, what was the basis for Aisha Wang to be able to be exfiltrated from Ghana when we knew she had committed threats that posed or that threatened our very existence? And these are not threats that are identifiable in the short term. You showed a video of the water bodies, but those water bodies are filled with cyanide and mercury. They've gone into the underground water. They are coming through our food chain. And I think at a point in time, it would be very interesting were you to get some scientist or some food scientist to do some work in the Galamsey areas and to see the levels of the remnants of cyanide and mercury in our food chain.
Prof just spoke to us, and she, you know, is on the ground investigating some of these things. And can you imagine what she tells us? That even water that the farmers need to use to mix their chemicals, they don't deem this water, you know, worth using. They have to buy sachet water to do that.
So when you allow people to do that, and I've said this on your program before, even in war, when you poison your water, it's not an acceptable thing. But normally people would do it to prevent the enemy from progressing to attack. But we have voluntarily, in peacetime, colluded with foreigners to destroy our water bodies. And the painful thing is, the bombastic explanations that are given to justify this. So the senior minister's earlier argument that Aisha Wang, were she to be prosecuted, could affect the Sinohydro loan raises particularly difficult questions. I said Aisha Wang had been left off the hook because she was a Chinese state agent. And Kudansu says, Vladimir Kudansu, my senior brother, that she is not intelligent enough to be a state agent. Now, that opens up even more disturbing things. If she is not that intelligent, what was the senior minister doing facilitating her exit? How has she been able to stay in Kumasi running her shop? And I know about 10 days ago, she was dining with some very important people. Okay? Now, if that is the hallmark of a woman who is unintelligent, then what is the IQ level of those that we have put our trust in? But something I'm also disturbed about, the amazing rapidity with which state institutions that had failed to act suddenly claim to be acting. In whose interest? Is it in their selfish interest so that they close the gap that exposes them? And I've asked or requested IGP Dr. Dan Parry to investigate this assertion by a minor that this woman was able to get a commander transferred. Okay, now, if that is true, then the very edifice of this state, those who should be protecting us, those that we have entrusted with our lives and the lives of generations yet unborn, have failed us and failed us woefully. Something, and that is why I'm arguing, and Martin Pibu and I this morning had a little conversation on TV3, that what the law states as punishment for
Poseidon's line just went. Okay. Thank you. Please unmute again. You're back.
Yes, I'm on.
Great.
I'm unmuted.
Great.
So, what the law states as punishment for those who engage in smuggling of cocoa, diamond coal, is not deterrent enough. Because, Samson, if, and I think last week I was on one of your morning shows, and what the chemical that should be in the water that we drink should be what? Is it 5 MNU or something? There was some technical term. But in cases, Ghana Water Company is found in 1,500, 2,000, 3,000. Okay, and if as a nation, we want to collude with those who do these things, and we are all rushing, I mean, institutions in Kumasi are now falling over themselves to demonstrate that they were part of the team that found Aishawan. I listened to the PRO of, I think, the Immigration Service, I think, Amwako something. And listening to him, that the way they had used intelligence and collaboration with communities to arrest this woman using internal checks. And I'm wondering, but this is a woman who got access, has been in town. Can anyone show us something? Which airline she traveled on, or the name of the ship that took her out of town, or the trotro number that took her to some border post? You see, the more the state and its institutions attempt to justify their failures, the more uncertain Ghanaians become. And I think it is emblematic of the Bonzo case. And it is not only Bozo. Okay. Galamse, as the previous speaker said, cannot happen if people are not protected. And it is that protection cartel, that facilitating cartel, that conniving cartel, that allows Aisha Wang and Helena Wang. Helena Wang is the one who has exported 6 million rosewood trees out of this country since 2012. Okay, Ghana Ports and Harbors Harbor Authority has something to answer. So, Samson, the edifice,
the forestry commission too, not just the Ghana Ports and Harbors.
No, I mean, Sir John's alleged will alone shows it. Okay, so it's a systematic institutionalized crime against the people of this country. And the report that found out about the rosewood, quote, that this is a corrupt institutionalized process that facilitated 6 million trees, rosewood trees, being cut, and all of them sent to China. Now, if this is not a state-supported process to undermine our ability to survive and to thrive, then what is it? So when the Chinese embassy last week says, oh, we don't support our citizens who come here to commit crime, why didn't the embassy issue a statement when the senior minister was sending Aishawan out or justifying exfiltration? No, no, we don't support that. Keep Aishawan here. Okay, I think there's a bigger picture that we are not beginning to look at, but that we should. So, Mr. Attorney General, great presentation, but please use a network and a link analysis approach to begin to understand the infrastructure, both the superstructure and the substructure that facilitates not only Madam Aisha, but her leanest criminal activities that is destroying this country.
Right. Let me come to Martin Pebu in the studio, and then I'll get to Professor John Osai Kwapong also to share what he also can share with us. And then we'll get to the minister. I want the minister to listen to this, our guest. And then after that, the minister should begin to tell us what is being done, what has been done, because we know that the minister, under the direction of the president, as he keeps telling us, has been taking a number of steps. And they are also doing alternative livelihoods for a number of communities. We have seen some of those interesting interventions. But Martin, when you hear, and thanks to the Fourth Estate, that publication by the Media Foundation for West Africa, I believe that they are giving us reason to believe that critical journalism will not die. And they don't do a story, touch it and leave it and go away. They sustain and pursue until we get to the end of that story. They have been using the RTI very, very, very vigorously. And they use the RTI regime to seek information. And data for 2016, 2018, 2019, and 2020, what they have been giving is that we have a total of 220 people who were jailed for illegal mining offenses. Over the period, we have seen, you know, newspaper front pages splashed with Chinese. Often, you have a dozen Chinese, one or two locals who are involved. But what comes as a surprise is that out of this number, 220, there were only two Chinese nationals in our jails. And so they, like many people, can't appreciate what exactly is going on. And I'm sure you will take us through the law. The law says if you are operating without a license, or you're actually buying the gold without a license, if you don't go through the Minerals Commission, Nana Kwesi Awards place, you are liable to go to jail for or pay a fine of up to 120,000, or you could go to jail between 15 to 25 years. If you're a non-Ghanaian and you're involved in the mining or you're participating in the Galamsey, you could pay about 1.8 million. And you could go to jail for 20, 25 years. And then it says you must serve the full term before you are deported. You must be deported. But if you're a Ghanaian who is permitting the non-Ghanaian to undertake this process, or you are facilitating the processes for them, you are liable to pay up to about 1.2 million or go to jail between 15 and 25 years. What do you find to be the weak point or the missing link?
Good. So, one word, leadership.
Yeah,
leadership. We lack leadership on the fight. The leadership isn't showing that they have the fortitude, if I may add Kukubaku's favorite phrase, the testicular fortitude to fight Galamsey. That's what it is. I like the way Professor Anyanku put it poignantly, that we don't mean the fight. And it just struck a chord with me. We don't really mean the fight. If we did, why would the operations team, the Operation Gallam, say, you know, later they even disbanded it. So let's just say, why would the police man the places during the daytime and then go to bed at night, knowing that if you did, these Galamseyers would come in the night to mine? And it beggars belief. And like, so can't the police run shifts? The military and the police, can't they run shifts? It's a no-brainer. But some would do the day and others would do the night. So if we can't fight Galamsey, we cannot keep just a few thousands out of these Galamsey fights, then I wonder if we really can fight a real battle if Ghana were attacked. Yeah, that's what it comes
down. But there have been situations where these people you are talking about, mm-hmm. who are supposed to police the process, mm-hmm. have been complicit.
Excellent. So that's the thing. So there is no willpower. We just don't have the willpower to fight. No, we don't. That's how those people get complicit. I think Professor Kisini mentioned, was it earlier in the week, the example of some soldiers who went to the site. I mean, they were supposed to help the fight. They got so much money and they went to Cape Coast to booze. They were having fun in a pub in their uniform and all that, right? So that is why it is. So Sam, just like Professor Anyaku begged you guys.
May be the bad examples. I believe that there will be patriotic Ghanaians within the security and all over who are also doing the right thing, right?
Yeah, but it's not sufficient. So it means that we don't have enough of a critical mass. That's how come the bad nuts have taken over the show. And as you know, they say one bad granite spoils all the granites, right? Yes, so the bad nuts have taken over. Because, you know, at a point, it's because of these squabbles, this getting compromised and the rest, that the squad was, what, disbanded. Operation Gallant Fight, or what do they call it? They've disbanded them. Formed another one, also got disbanded, right? So it's just one word. I think this thing is about leadership. We don't intend to fight. That's why we are struggling like this. Because how? If we can't fight the Galamsey, can Ghana be protected? No. That's the obvious no. That's the obvious no. You know, the president said he was putting his, presidency on the line. Yes, that was a nice byline for media. We all caught on that, yes, the president means it, but with hindsight, you see that no.
Some say he did to a certain extent, and that is reflected mm-hmm. in what numbers he got in parliament and almost lost an election.
Yes, so he has to stand for it. The reason the numbers will go down and all those things, I think part of it is that, you see, some will be prevented from mining, and then the powerful ones would mine. So you weren't treating the people well. And also, the other thing is that then it means that we had failed. Like the way you say, the constitution, the heart of this constitution is about economic development as well. Mm. So Article 36 says that the state should be managed in a way to maximize the rate of economic development and to secure the maximum welfare, freedom, and happiness of every person in Ghana, and to provide adequate means of livelihood and suitable employment and public assistance to the needy. That is 36.1. That is the business of government. So if government can't provide the jobs, then the citizens are compelled to do the illegal. Mm. They must earn their living. So that's all. It still comes to leadership, because we thought jobs would be provided. We're moving from taxation to production. We've not seen enough of it. So when the citizens are unemployed, this is what they will end up doing. So it's a leadership problem. There's a huge leadership deficit in the country. That's why this thing is going on. Because it beggars belief. A few thousands cannot be kept out of these sites. And of course, you know, through Graveyard, you hear very powerful people are still mining. Very powerful people are still mining. Mm. Otherwise, why would this continue? You see, so, and you know, at this, you remember this morning, I was just looking at it. Came in studio with this book by the pamphlet by Thomas Paine. Mm. And you know, Thomas Paine is the father of the American Revolution. You know, he inspired them. You know, before they did, America got independence from the UK. The people were not willing to fight for independence. You know, they are the same people, basically. So they just thought, they are aggrieved British people. So we don't want independence. We just want to resolve our differences with the king. No, but through Paine's writing, they saw that, they had to take independence. But it's not the independence per se that I'm interested in. But I'm just looking at things that were written in 1776, till date, there are still problems for us. And what am I interested in here? The fact that when we give up our personal freedoms, we do so because we know that as individuals, there is a moral deficit, the thing we've been calling in Ghana here, not enough honest people. There's a problem with honesty, and that's always been the thing. That's why we've decided to come together as a state. Mm. But if we come together as a state and the governance architecture is so warped, is poorly done, and you give all the power to one man and he's compromised, he can't fight the Lamsey because he needs votes, like you're saying, because he can't provide jobs and the citizens want to do the Lamsey.
You, from your perspective, and the minister is on the line, we'll speak to him shortly. Mm-hmm. From your perspective, this thing, we want the minister to listen to you guys and then be able to get a certain sense and give us a certain response. Mm-hmm. We hope that he can be patient to wait. Mm-hmm. Now, the attorney general, I'm looking from a perspective where the law, as was amended over and again to increase the fines, you know, increase the penalties that people must suffer. You will expect that is what the state will use. Mm-hmm. There was this guy, is it Ching Zeals or something, one of the kingpins. Mm-hmm. He was arrested. Mm-hmm. He was put before the circuit court in Takwa. Mm-hmm. Guess what? At the end, he had been sentenced and convicted to a fine. Mm-hmm. Now, Attorney General said, this is not the way to go. So he went to court with a certiorari application mm-hmm. against that kind of sentence. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Against that kind of sentence by the court.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the Attorney General is fighting a court.
Okay.
Hmm.
What's happened?
Went for that. The certiorari was upheld. Mm-hmm. Then, subsequently, he was sentenced to 15 years in prison.
Okay?
Actually, a number of them. Yeah. I think these are the two guys who are there serving the prison terms.
Okay. My response is that, look, it's not... postmortem. We are interested in our security forces taking over and preventing. Don't wait for it to happen.
We're asking about the weak points.
Yes.
And some of them, some have had the cause to tell us mm-hmm. that you say we take them to court and they just get little things here and they run away.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a whole system.
Yes. Yes.
Here was a judge determining that it was a fine, that was it.
But Sam, you see, before this program started, then perhaps that's a problem I've just seen, the gap in the law that I was pointing out to you. Please, and let the lawyers who are listening also check Act 995, the section, that's the amendment. So 99...
That's the latest amendment.
Yes, mm-hmm. 995. So that section 99.3 gives the option of a fine. That's what is stated here. I think that's a problem. Let's read it.
For a non-Ghanaian.
Yes, let's read. And so it creates, it turns the law on its head. Because even at the passing of this law, the president may declare that they were taking even discretion from judges.
Exactly, that's what he said, that
exactly.
They wanted to take the discretion from the judges.
Yeah, which
he was of the
problem.
View that the judges were not helping.
Yes, which creates another problem altogether. But we'll reserve that for another day. But let's come to the 99.3. You see the problem it creates. And so it needs an amendment. It says, a non-Ghanaian who undertakes a mining operation or facilitates the participation of any person in mining, contrary to a provision of this act, commits an offense and is liable on a conviction to a fine, blah, blah, let's know, so that will make the sense, and B, a term of imprisonment of not less than 20 years and not more than 25 years, or, that's where the problem starts, or C, both the fine and the imprisonment. So, you know, as lawyers, we have different schools of thought.
Mm.
There are the literalists, okay, then the purposive school, and all those things of interpreting legislation.
Right.
So somebody will sit there and say, this is a law you said you were passing to make it more efficient. You didn't see this all, and we all make mistakes. But after seeing it, steps between that time. So
you never
it.
Know that you may be pointing this out mm-hmm. to those who must do something now.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember, we'll come to judgment death.
Yes.
There was this judgment death matter. It was raised on news file. Mm-hmm. Then the Attorney General heard about it.
Okay.
We called him. He called into the show.
Yes.
And then took steps
yes.
to take a suit yes. again yes. to overturn it in favor of the state.
Mm-hmm.
And the matter I'm talking about was in respect of these two Chinese, Chen Huang and Chen Zhiyu. Then there were two non-Chinese, Stephen Arthur and Prince Dennis Addo. So the president said the judges don't seem to want to help. So they wanted to take the discretion away from them. And therefore, they amended the law in 2019. And that's where you see these hefty fines, 120,000, 1.8 million, 1.2 million fines, and then 15 to 25 years, in some situations, 20 to 25 mm-hmm. years. That's for Chinese nationals.
Yes. Non-Ghanaian.
Yes.
Since I hear they are Togolese, Ivorians,
right.
and the rest.
All right, non-Ghanaians, not exactly Chinese yes. nationals. Right. So, if you have judges, you know, deciding that it's just a fine, and then the Attorney General has to go to court and fight the court, that you can't say just a fine is enough.
Mm-hmm.
And then, eventually, the court upholds his view, and then they get a sentence of 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
How is the court system also helping? Now, John Osaya Kwapong, thank you very much. Now, from the two incidents that have happened this week, once again, that's my question. From the two incidents that have happened this week, what do you think we are not doing right that ought to be looked at again before we raise the minister and get to hear what they have done so far and what they are seeking to do to assure Ghanaians that the water will not continue to be polluted, the environment will not continue to be degraded the manner we are seeing?
The submissions of all of the guests. And you put it all together, you realize that there are quite a number of missing links. So I remember years ago during my dissertation work, one of my cases had to do with the gold mining sector. So I got to learn a little bit more about this whole Galamsey illegal mining operation. And I was quite struck by the strength of the economic incentives that drives people to actually engage in Galamsey, right? So you have to ask yourself whose economic interest is really at stake in this fight. Because if I used to say to myself, given all of the risk involved in Galamsey, why do people wake up every day and go and engage in these activities, pool resources together, etc., etc.? So there's the strong economic incentive, financial incentive to engage in this. So if you are going to fight it, you have to also then look at the interest behind these strong economic incentives and how best you can deal with them. For the local people, for example, I know over the years, every so often there's talk about alternate livelihoods. So if you can strengthen such a component like that, right? So you disincentivize them from engaging in Galamsey, but then you provide an alternative way for them to earn a livelihood by engaging in certain more productive economic activities, then that I believe can help. But then there's Lawyer Martin Pepu calls it leadership. But there's also the political component of it, the political incentives. I was just reading a very interesting piece by one Dr. Isaac Haruna, who is with the London School of Economics. And it's very interesting through his research how he traces the way incumbents deal with this issue of Galamsey, where they go between, we really want to clamp down on this, but then at some point, for whatever political reasons and with an eye to voter backlash, may either soften their stance or change some of their stance towards this. The leadership also cannot come just from the national level, because I always say that if you look at where Galamsey occurs, that I think Professor Ansah talked about getting local people also involved. So you also cannot rely on just national leadership, meaning it can't just be the president sending, you know, signals that this is bad, we really have to do something about it. That's a very important component, don't get me wrong. But you also have to get local leadership to be willing to join hands with regional and national leadership to break all the various interests that have collated around supporting this illegal activity. So whether it's your DCs, whether it's your assemblymen, whether it's your local police force, whether it's your local security forces, all of them also have to have that incentive and come to that recognition that if we are really going to deal with this menace, you can't have one group committed to fighting it and then another group turning around to undermine the same, you know, the same fight. So ultimately, then it boils down to how willing is both national, regional, and local leadership really ready to fight whoever's interest is at stake and is fueling this illegal activity, and say to themselves, we don't really care about the political consequences of this, good or bad, right? But, I mean, you look at the pictures, you look at the stories, you look at the research, and it has to be good politics to want to fight galamsey, right? That if you can really find a successful way of fighting this, I don't see why, when you think of the politics, it should be one of, if we are not careful, we will lose votes in galamsey areas, and therefore, you know, we sort of some days have to fight it, you know, in tough ways, and then other times we sort of have to cajole the whole process. But all the points raised by the previous speakers really is the missing links that we have to put together if we are really going to get rid of this issue.
There have been people, and you just heard not long ago from Professor Kwesi Eni, questioning joining that school of thought to ask whether indeed Aisha Hwang was repatriated or deported as we were told, or the more appropriate language to use is repatriated. Now, is it the lack of information from the state to us, or what is leading to this? You would have heard Samuel Okudjetua Ablakwa also almost literally come to the point that it's a deceit. He was not deported, and they must show evidence of that. But what some of us know is that the Immigration Service actually issued what it called Notice of Revocation of Permit and Repatriation. And this was on the 16th of December, 2018. And it was addressed to Eng Hwang, that's Aisha Hwang. The notice was signed by the Comptroller General, Kwame Suyatechi. Another record which was important was the fact that an Ethiopian Airlines, you know, itinerary, you know, will show of the same date in 2018 that she had boarded, or there was a boarding pass in her name, and there was the flight number, and I have the flight number here also, the seat number, the gate that she had to use, the class was economy class. So why do you think that Ghanaians still have doubts about the fact that whether she was actually, you know, deported? Is it that they are thinking, like what Osafomafo said then, which was regretted later by the president himself, that the state is not just being sincere to us?
Well, one of the things that you would find, and once again I have to quote Afrobarometer, but one of the things you find is that there is also a trust issue when it comes to our governance institution. So over time, if you look at the percentage of Ghanaians who say they trust institutions a lot, whether it's the courts, whether it's parliament, whether it's the police, whether it's the presidency, you see very low levels of trust and then also declining levels of trust. So in such an environment, if information is not provided and provided rapidly, such narratives tend to grow and perpetuate, right, and persist. In the case of Aisha, I think what has even deepened the mistrust is some of the other information that we've come to learn in the public spaces about not just her return, but coming back to engage in the very activity that, you know, saw her being deemed as having run afoul of the law, being deported. And then you read stories about the fact that not only did she come back to continue those activities, but she was also able to get a Ghana card, etc., etc. I think all of those things deepen that suspicion and deepens that mistrust of the very state institutions that are supposed to, you know, enforce the law around whether it is, you know, illegal mining, whether it is immigration issues and all of that. So I think that that mistrust and knowing that someone deemed to be, you know, to have broken the laws of Ghana was able to come back is what is actually fueling this narrative that, well, probably she didn't even leave, etc. But as you've also shown, there are records of the deportation order. There's evidence that she, you know, she boarded an Ethiopian Airlines flight, etc., etc. But in an environment of mistrust, it's very difficult for state institutions to get citizens to believe them, even when they are telling the truth.
Okay. Now, we'll take a quick break and then return. And when we return, we'll go to Prof, to take us to the background again where she has been working and investigating these matters, and to give us bring us up to speed with what she wanted to tell us about. And then I'll have all of you, as it were, tell us what you think sincerely, if you can give us about 3-2, you know, major, you know, points or list of to do that we must engage in to take to make the fight real, actual, and one that is winnable. Else, we are doomed, are we not? Because it's not looking good at all. Our water bodies, the environment itself. I mean, how can we get to this? Now, I have permission to share in full the details of her deportation. And it is that the notice of revocation of permits and repatriation, which was issued, was on the 19th, was dated 19th December 2018, and was addressed to her, that's Aisha Huang and Huang. The notice was signed by the Comptroller General Kwame Esua Tetchi. Another record that will buttress that she had in fact been deported is that the airline she used was Ethiopian Airlines, and the itinerary is dated 19th December 2018, same date. Then her boarding pass had her name. The flight number is ET920 from Accra to Addis Ababa. Seat number 32F. Seat number 32F. And the gate that she used was gate C. The class was economy. The booking code, the time was 11:35. And so this is supposed to indicate that, in fact, she had been deported. Now, just this message here from a lawyer who doesn't want to identify himself. He says that the patriotic Ghanaians are something you are talking about as being in the security. You'll be shocked to know that they often do not get selected for these operations. And as you know, some of our courts, however, you know, the small their number, have become transactional entities. And the better we got to know that this is happening, the better for all of us. We must do a lot more to get rid of that. Then Osma says that Martin is right. It's all about leadership. And then he says that he's a soldier and he took part in the so-called Operation Halt. And it's very sad to see military generals taking monies from these illegal miners and allowing them to continue. We sometimes have to provide security to some illegal miners during the operations. And this is coming from a gentleman who says he is in the military and sends the message to me through the name I have mentioned. We'll take a quick break.